I'm lying in bed with Lucy, waiting for her to fall asleep. If I get up too soon, she'll beg for one more book. I already read Tacky the Penguin and Blue's Best Rainy Day. I'll tell her no, and she'll say please, stretching the E's out for several seconds to show me that she's being extra polite and that her request is extra important, and I'll say no, and in the course of this arousing tete-a-tete, she'll wake herself up. It's just easier if I stay until she's out. I'm spooning her small body, and my nose is on her head. She smells like heaven, an elixir of Johnson's baby shampoo, Tom's of Maine's strawberry toothpaste, and Nilla wafers. I think I'll cry the day all my kids stop using Johnson's baby shampoo. Who will they smell like then? She's so warm, and her deepened breathing is hypnotic. I wish I could let myself drift off with her, but I have miles to go before I can sleep. This is the trick every night, to leave after she surrendered the fight to be up, but before I give in to the desire to close my eyes. When I'm convinced she's fully unconscious, I slide out from under the covers, tiptoe around all the toys and crafts, landmines strewn on the floor, and steal out of her darkened room like I'm James Bond. Bob is eating a bowl of cereal on the couch. Sorry, babe, I couldn't wait. No apologies necessary. I'm relieved. I love it when I don't have to think about what we're going to eat for dinner, and I love it even more when I don't have to cook anything. Well, I should admit I don't exactly cook. I microwave. I heat up already prepared and cooked food. And the takeout taxi phone number is programmed into our speed dial. But cereal might just be my favorite dinner at home. It's not that I don't enjoy a sumptuous and elegant meal at Pisces or Mistral, but dinner at home on the couches with Bob isn't about ambience and fine dining. It's about getting rid of the hunger pangs as quickly as possible and moving on. We spend the next 3 hours in the living room on separate couches with our laptops on our laps. CNN is on the TV for background noise and the occasional interesting soundbite. I am mostly emailing our offices in China and India. Boston is 12 hours behind China and 10 and a half hours behind India, so now is tomorrow morning for them. This still blows my mind. I'm a time traveler doing business in real time on Thursday, when it is still only Wednesday where I sit on my couch. Amazing. Bob is clicking around the internet and networking for jobs. He's at a promising information technology startup, and the payoff is potentially huge if they get acquired or go public. But as with most fledgling companies in this economy, things aren't looking so good. The recession is hitting them hard, and the skyrocketing growth trajectories Bob projected when he signed on 3 years ago feel like a distant, silly fantasy. At this point, they're simply trying not to bleed to death. He just survived a second round of layoffs, but he isn't planning on sticking around and holding his breath through a third. The problem is Bob is picky, and not many companies are hiring. I can tell by his pinched mouth and the vertical ravine between his furrowed brows that he isn't finding anything. The uncertainty of his job, both current and future, has been really weighing on him. When he starts sliding down what-if slippery slope to Doomsville, what if I lose my job tomorrow? What if I can't find another? What if we can't make the mortgage payments? I try to brush them all off and make the load lighter for him. Don't worry, honey, you'll be fine. The kids will be fine. We'll all be fine. But the what-ifs take up residence in my head, and in my head, I'm captain of the Champion Luge team, barreling at record speed to Doomsville. What if he does get laid off and can't find another job? What if we have to sell the house in Vermont? But then what if we can't sell it in this depressed market? What if we can't pay the student loans, the car payments, the heating bill? What if we can't afford to stay in Wellmont? I close my eyes and see the word debt written in all caps and red ink. My chest tightens and it feels like there's no air in the room, and my laptop is suddenly unbearably hot on my legs and I'm sweating. Stop thinking about it. Take your own advice. He'll be fine. The kids will be fine. We'll be fine. Deluded mantra. I decide to watch TV for a minute to take my mind off of Doomsville. Anderson Cooper is reporting about a San Diego mother who accidentally left her 2-year-old toddler in the back seat of her locked car for 8 hours while she worked at her job. When the mother returned to her car at the end of the day, her toddler was dead from heat exhaustion. Officials are deciding whether or not to press charges. What was I thinking? CNN is the capital of Doomsville. My eyes fill with tears thinking about this woman and her dead child. I imagine the 2-year-old, helpless to escape the car seat's 5-point harness, terror and fevered desperation giving way to organ failure. How will that mother ever forgive herself? I think of my mother. Bob, can you change the channel? He flips to a local news station. One of the anchors is listing today's news from bad to worse. Banks begging for bailouts, soaring unemployment rates, the stock market in free fall, Doomsville, USA. I get up and go to the kitchen to look for some chocolate and a big glass of wine. We both surrender the day at 11. Before the sun rises in Boston, consultants in the various European offices will be sipping their first espressos of the day, adding their emails to my inbox with their morning's questions, concerns, and reports. And at about the same time, Linus will wake up. Groundhog Day all over again. It used to take me a long time to fall asleep, anywhere from 20 minutes to a full hour. I used to have to read something totally unrelated to my day, like a novel, to distract and calm my racing thoughts. And Bob's snoring used to drive me crazy. It's truly nothing short of miraculous that he can sleep through all his own growling and whistling. He says he's protecting our cave from predators. While I appreciate his idea about the origin of the man's snore, I believe that we as a species have evolved past the need for it, like the dead-bolted front door to begin with. But his Fred Flintstone snore will not be phased out by modern technology. There have been many nights when I wanted to suffocate him with my pillow and take my chances with the lions, tigers, and bears. But no more. Since about the time Lucy was born, I'm asleep within 5 minutes of my head hitting the pillow. If I try to read, I don't get past the page I start on. I can't remember the last time I finished a novel. And if I happen to surface into a light sleep during the night and notice Bob snoring, I roll over and sink unperturbed back into slumber. The negative side to this is its impact on our sex life. I'm embarrassed to admit this, but I can't remember the last time we had sex. I like sex with Bob, and I still want to have sex with Bob, but I don't seem to like and want it enough to stay awake long enough to make it happen. I know we're both busy and tired at the end of the day, but I'm not too busy and tired to read to Lucy, email China, and go through the piles of bills. Yet every night, I draw the line at sex, and so does Bob. I remember when we used to have sex early in the evening, before we were too tired, sometimes even before going out, when we used to go out. Now, when we do manage to fit it in, it's always just before bed, always in bed, a pre-sleep activity like brushing teeth or flossing, although never with that kind of regularity. When I was single, I remember reading in Vogue or Cosmopolitan or one of those magazines I only read at the hairdressers that married couples with advanced degrees report having sex the least of all married couples, only 10 to 12 times a year. That's once a month. That will never be me, I thought. Of course, I was 20-something, single, without children, far less educated than I am now, and getting laid at least 2 to 3 times a week. I used to read the surveys in those magazines and think that they were entertaining but pure fiction. Now I hang on every brilliant word. I hope Bob doesn't doubt whether I'm still attracted to him. Ironically, if anything, I'm more attracted to him now than when we were dating and having sex all the time. Watching him feed Linus a bottle, kiss Lucy's boo-boo, teach Charlie over and over again how to tie his shoes, moments when I see him utterly unselfconscious and absorbed in loving them, I feel like I could burst with how much I adore him. I regret the nights when I'm so tired that I fall asleep before telling him that I love him. And I'm irrationally angry with him on the nights that he falls asleep before he tells me. If we're too unmotivated to eat a grown-up dinner, too preoccupied with emails and job hunting to snuggle on the couch and watch a movie, and too tuckered out to consider 3 minutes of sex, then we can at least say we love each other before we pass out. I lie in bed alone and wait for Bob. I want to tell him that I love him, that even if he loses his job tomorrow, I'll still love him. that wherever what if takes us, we'll be okay because we love each other. But he takes too long in the bathroom and I fall asleep before I get a chance to tell him, worried for some reason that he doesn't know.